John Wick Chapter 4 has decimated the box office, as well as winning the hearts of critics and audiences around the world in just its first week. Let's dive into Chapter 4 of this franchise. Hello, movie friends. Welcome back to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, the ultimate film and TV podcast. We just saw an early screening of John Wick Chapter 4, thanks to IMAX, with special guests Keanu Reeves and Chad Stahelski. It was a wonderful experience to watch this crazy, super intense film with high-octane action, excellent characters, and then to do a Q&A with Keanu Reeves afterwards. It was a magical night to just see the man, the myth, the legend in person. My mind was blown. Before we get started, we're going to be doing a movie poster contest giveaway in this episode, thanks to our friends at movieposters.com. In order to join this contest, make a comment on the YouTube episode of our John Wick Chapter 4 review. Then you'll be entered in to win a free movie poster from movieposters.com. It's wild how big this franchise has become. Chapter 4, you know, an excellent addition to John Wick, and spoilers, obviously, in this episode. We're going to be talking about the finale, and I'll probably spoil it right now, the end of John Wick, which is a character that I think needed to die, which I think was one of the best parts of the film, is ending it, even though they set up a whole verse. But, you know, this, you could argue, is Keanu's most iconic role now compared to The Matrix with Neo. I still think Neo is his best role for me, and his most iconic role in my heart, but especially for young moviegoers and young movie lovers who've grown up with Keanu Reeves as John Wick first versus like then going to watch The Matrix and like, oh yeah, The Matrix is cool. But yeah, they're really into John Wick versus Neo for their most iconic role that Keanu has done. That's what he's kind of like more known for now.
I think you're right.
And this franchise has just become one of the best action franchises in cinema history. That's a fact. You know, what they did in terms of the stunts, the choreography, the changing up of fighting in movies, and just the brutal nature of the gunfights, the close quarter gunfights, and the jiu-jitsu, the judo, now incorporating more martial arts in 3 and the number 4, and just the savage body counts in all these movies. They really just changed the game of the action genre, where, you know, movies like The Raid kind of just started paving the way forward, building that foundation for incredible nonstop action thrill rides with incredible fight choreography that Hollywood, I think, was craving for so long. I mean, it kind of was here in the early 2000s, but kind of just disappeared with some of those great actors like Jackie Chan, kept martial arts alive, Jet Li in Hollywood for a while. But there was kind of a time where it wasn't a big genre for a bit.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we grew up and we had those two. They were the most popular. Jason Statham had a Transporter franchise, but that was not as successful as a franchise. None of those movies were huge hits, but he did a lot of great martial arts in that film, in those films. But I would say that's a good point about Neo and John Wick, because what really makes the difference between the franchises is that John Wick has had consistency. All of the movies are good. Matrix, you can't say the same thing about it, especially with the fourth entry of both those franchises. The fourth entry of Matrix, wish I never saw it. Fourth entry of John Wick, I had an absolute blast, and it felt right in the world. And it was a terrific conclusion. I thought it was one of the more satisfying conclusions to a modern franchise I've seen in a very long time. I did not want there to be a John Wick Chapter 9. I did not want one last time. He's back. He's thinking he's back.
I'm back again.
I didn't want that. So I walked into this film hoping, like, I was like, oh man, I really hope that like they're not going to keep making these, because sometimes too much can be a bad thing. And stretching a story out when it doesn't need to be stretched out too far can push the audience away, me especially. And so I was so happy with the ending of the film. I liked the way that John went down, kind of on his own terms. It was a really beautiful conclusion for the character. And the ending of this film got back to the heart of the first film. That I think the first one was my favorite still, because I love the character arc in that. I love the reveal of the world. And then the action was so visceral and unexpected in the first film. And obviously the action's better and improved and bigger and more complex and extravagant in the latter films. But something about the action in the first film, it just felt more immediate, like more dangerous for John, because we hadn't seen him do this for 3 films, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I do prefer the first film out of the whole franchise, but that's just me. I know a lot of people are absolutely adoring this film, rightfully so, because it's a very impressive film. Shot in 35mm film, gorgeous cinematography, great hallmarks and homages to one of our favorite films, Lawrence of Arabia. All around incredible production design and an excellent, talented new cast.
I'd probably rank them 1, 3, 4, 2. I think Parabellum is fucking awesome.
I think Parabellum has the best fight with the knives fight.
I think that whole movie's great, but plus Halle Berry coming in there. And I loved, not to say that I didn't love John Wick Chapter 4, because I really did, but there were some things that I will nitpick about it in a little bit, talk about. I think the runtime was a little too much, almost 3 hours. And another con just off the bat real quick is Keanu Reeves spoke 308 words.
Yeah, he
did. In the whole movie, 308 words. I understand that John Wick speaks with bullets and fists and knives, but I mean, it's a 3-hour movie and John Wick says 308 words.
Yeah.
And I know The Matrix, he had like 105 lines, but he still said a lot of words, and 94 of those were questions, those lines, but still more than 308 words. So like for me, it felt a little bit not like a John Wick movie the first hour, but the third act of this film really was sensational, tremendous, incredible sequences like in France around the Arc and the Circle, as well as the overhead Wonder shot in the third act was fucking awesome. I thought that was one of the coolest things I've seen all year in film.
The staircase.
Staircase was excellent. We'll talk about all these more in depth, but right now this is just a huge smash hit. It made $137 million in its first opening weekend. It just came out, and so it's just killing right now. $70 million domestic, 95% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, 95% audience score, 8.5 on IMDb with 50,000 reviews. So people are absolutely adoring this movie. Keanu Reeves is the man. He did 90% of his own stunts in this movie, which was fucking awesome to see. Sorry, dropping lots of F-bombs already.
I'm going to have to edit them out.
It's a rated R episode, I guess, just like this rated R movie. Obviously, rest in peace, Lance Reddick, who his character also unfortunately passes away in this film, just like he passed away in real life right around the premiere of this movie, which is so unfortunate because he was such a great and integral part of this world building for John Wick, as well as he kicked some major ass in the other films.
In the third one,
him and John with the shotguns, they go off, man. And also the second one, too. We got a ton of new characters in this movie. We got Shimazu, played by Hiroki Sanada, the man from Last Samurai, so many great movies. We have Akira, Tracker, The Harbinger, Kane, played by Donnie Yen, the icon, Killa, and then the Marquis, a.k.a. Nobody. We'll get into each of these characters individually, but I still think that this movie was sensational. Had a super strong opening. The incredible, like, punching the wood opening of John Wick with the voiceover,
the sound design
of the barrel ring from Lawrence Fishburne. And then also, he brought up the Lawrence of Arabia reference, which was the match cut of blowing out the match, cutting to the sunrise in the desert, was gorgeous. And it was like a contemporary version of that because it's just so much faster because Lawrence of Arabia, it's like a 2-minute sunrise. It's gorgeous. You got to check it out. I actually tweeted that video like a month ago saying it's the greatest cut in cinema history. And then it just started going like popping on Twitter the other day because people were like, oh my God, that's from John Wick. So I really love how Chad Stahelski, even though we're in this modern contemporary landscape of movies, just took something from a great movie that he probably loves and just referenced it in his movie.
Well, I mean, it just goes to show you that it's clearly one of the greatest movies ever made if so many great filmmakers respect it that much. And I got it right here on the set. And they actually did film it in Morocco in the same locations as
so many of the same shots.
I recognize a bunch of the rock formations, and as well as when he kills that member of the High Table in the opening of the film. Not exactly boom. That's actually an exact spot that they filmed the scene of Lawrence of Arabia
and
so,
Jordan the desert
yeah
as well.
Exactly. So that Lawrence of Arabia was not filmed in those actual areas. They were Morocco and Jordan took the place of those deserts. So they weren't actually in the correct geographical locations. Also, Dune has shot in a couple of those locations as well because some of the rock formations just look so extraterrestrial in terms of nature, geography and nature. It's like, how is that on planet Earth? And so it was a wonderful opening. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be too much green screen because you just got a bit of it in the trailer. But they filmed that entire sequence there for real. 10 seconds into that sequence of him riding the horses, shooting guns. I was like, oh shit, they really filmed this in the desert. I was like, that's really Keanu riding a horse in the middle of the desert, like shooting people. I was like, damn, they went there for real. So kudos to Chad Stahelski as a director. Obviously, there's CGI and visual effects enhancements here and there, but he does a really phenomenal job of using practicality, real sets, real stunt actors, real performances. Obviously, like when Killa falls and like his head smashes on the, that was a little visual effects helping that impact. But he does a wonderful job of really shooting everything in camera, and then he'll play around with it a little bit afterwards to maybe speed something up or throw some visual effects like fake blood or whatever if he has to. But and most notably in this film, I think the most important use of visual effects that they could not do in real life, like it was too dangerous of a stunt.
The gun was fired to the head.
The dragon breath gun.
I'm just kidding. No,
yeah. The dragon breath gun. So that shotgun that spat out like inflamed shells. They couldn't do that for real. They did light some of the stunt people on fire, Stahelski said, and Keanu said, but the outside of that, that was just a blank gun. It was firing blanks. And so that had to be done in post. That's something, if you're spraying fire on people that aren't in fireproof suits, that's way too dangerous. So I would say that's probably the only stunt they had to do visual effects heavy work on.
But still lighting guys on fire who
exactly.
are running around. But
yes.
Those shotgun shells were CGI and added in mm-hmm. post-production. And I think that was one of the best parts of the sequence of the Wonder over the head shot over above the ceiling. That was so awesome. It reminded me of Constantine when he has the shotgun.
Same.
Except when the water's coming down. That was so cool. I thought that was an awesome little reference.
Hi,
maybe.
I'm John.
But yeah, so much great practical filmmaking. And clearly, Chad Stahelski is really efficient because $90 million budget. This movie looks like it was a $200 million movie. Because of the locations, the size of these sets, that club, they built those waterfalls all over those walls. That was all done practically in person. So, and obviously all of the guns and squibs and stunt people and stunt work and having trucks, like the sequence where they were going around the roundabout in France at that arc and all these people are getting hit by cars. They're really hitting people with cars, although they had CGI giant pads that they'd slam into. They're really only going about 10 to 15 miles per hour max for impact hits. But still, they're driving cars that are green screen padded and everything and smashing into them.
And we learned a lot of background from Stahelski. We got the inside scoop, especially with that scene, because people were really bouncing off of cars for real. The stunt actors were really rolling into cars and like letting them lift them up in the air. But then if, say, a guy was hit by a car and flew in the air, they actually really did that, but they had them on wires as well so that they could slow down their fall to the ground so that when they hit the ground, they weren't hitting it like with complete gravity full on onto the pavement. So they were able to slow their fall. That way they could realistically get hit, launched in the air, and then safely land on the ground. So they did a great job of trying their best to do as much wire work as they could so they wouldn't have to rely on visual effects. And I think in terms of the production design, it seemed like they saved a ton of money by going, especially with all the scenes with the Marquis, with Bill Skarsgård's character. He's in incredible, extravagant locations. Especially the opening with his first scene with Donnie Yen when he's hiring him. There's a couple of great like interiors, gigantic, beautiful sets. I'm guessing that they saved a lot just by renting one of those sets for a day and filming just that quick scene there rather than having an entire team build sets. That's pretty expensive to do. So I'm guessing they saved a lot while making it look great by renting really incredible locations for maybe a day or two of filming, shooting pretty quickly. That way you have the style in the like elitist areas, these huge extravagant locations, up the production value. And I think they were able to save on costs by not actually building these things out.
Yeah, because they're all over the planet Earth in this movie. They are traversing the globe. I mean, does John Wick have like frequent flyer miles? Like, what's going on? Does the high table
Is there
have
a continental plane?
I don't know.
I wonder.
But I mean, I will say I love John Wick, but like, how does he get all these countries so quickly not being discovered by the high table? is he taking boats?
Yeah, you're right. Maybe it would have been helpful to show how he gets transported from
But
area
also,
area.
I don't want to see, I don't need to see
yeah,
it. It's just like
it's
Batman getting back to Gotham. After Bane has him in Morocco.
In Morocco.
Exactly.
Same area.
In the prison.
It's the
so
same
it's like,
fucking spot.
It's like, I don't give a fuck. I don't need to see it, but it's still funny to think about. Like, is like John like a American Airlines kind of guy, or is he flying first class?
Might want to avoid first class. He might get seen.
That's what I mean, because the high table, what we learned in this movie, the scope of this underworld just gets bigger and bigger with this franchise. And by the third one, it was really big, but by this movie, the underworld of the high table, its organizations, it's everywhere. It's so massive.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that we didn't get to see the High Table. I thought we'd be getting to see the real leaders of this organization, the people who run it, the people who call out all these missions and are in charge of everything. I thought we'd see members of the High Table, but we got basically the sons and daughters of the people of the High Table, because isn't the Marquis, his father is on the High Table? Is that what they said?
I thought he was on the High Table.
No, it's
himself.
His father, okay. I'm pretty sure. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure. I've only seen it once.
So I agree. I was hoping we would get to... I thought like we were going to peek and get the final reveal of the world, which is who's really running things. Who are the people in charge of this hidden society hiding in plain sight? So I also was a little underwhelmed that we didn't get to see that table. We heard so much talk of it. This one in particular really centers on the High Table as a main plot device. So I was the same, pretty disappointed that we didn't get to see, like, where is this High Table? Do these people, is it like Game of Thrones with the King's Table where the advisors and the hand of the king speak to the king or queen for strategies and what's going on? I was expecting like a table like that where there would be all of the highest members in charge of probably each faction or major family or headquarters. I was hoping to see that. And so when we were in the third act, I was like, I thought maybe we were going to see it at the finale for like witnessing the duel. I thought like the High Table would come to witness the duel. But then when we got there, I was like, oh man, we're just not going to see them, I guess. So maybe they're saving it for another film. But I wanted to see them in this film.
I wanted to see it in the third one.
Yeah, the third one.
There's no way we don't see the High Table in this movie.
In the fourth one, yeah. Maybe the reason why we didn't see it is because this was initially developed as two films. So they were planning to make John Wick 4 and 5 and shoot them back to back. And then Lionsgate even announced that we're working on the scripts for both films. So maybe they had stuff planned for film 5 that they ended up saying, we don't really need this for the film once they reduce it down to one film, just on John Wick 4. So maybe they had more things that were threads that were going into reveals for the fifth film that ended up not happening.
You know, I think that, and also I guarantee there was an original idea for this movie that was more John-centered, because this movie, John Wick 4, John Wick Chapter 4, loved it, but it also felt like an almost MCU-level setup for characters for spinoffs, which I think was pretty obvious with the post-credit scene that the Tracker, as well as Akira and
maybe some other characters
are going to get their own spinoff projects, whether they're TV shows or movies. So it felt quite like a bouncing board, or like that was one of their goals of this movie, was to make a trampoline for other characters.
Yeah. Winston is getting his own prequel series that's being made right now. Called The Continental. Mm-hmm. So it's a Winston Origins.
Origins!
It's been a while since we had an Origins on the show. So I will say, as much as I really enjoyed the film, that was another con for me, that it felt a little too much like a modern comic book movie with establishing characters that they are setting up for films of their own or TV shows of their own. And also, the post-credit scene, even Keanu made fun of the post-credit scene.
He made fun of it in person.
They came out, the film rolled, and then we stayed for the credits, and then they did the post-credit scene. And it cuts right before, like, Akira is presumably about to attack Kane, we can assume. And then Stahelski and Keanu came out, and Keanu's like, why didn't you show it? He's like, why do it if you're not going to show it?
He's like, he should have just gone up and she should have stabbed him right in the throat, just like, bop, 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 should have killed that motherfucker.
Yeah.
So he was roasting the post-credit scene.
Yeah, and Stahelski was like, yeah, I know. So maybe it's something the Lionsgate was really pushing.
It seemed like
that's
it,
my guess, because, I mean, as in terms of post-credit scenes, I didn't really like the post-credit scene, because they already established that Akira was going to go hunt Kane sometime in the future when she got off the train, and he said, but before that, when he said, I'll be expecting you, it basically is like same thing that Beatrix says after she kills her in the kitchen. She says, if you ever want revenge, I'll be here.
If you're feeling sour.
Yeah. So it was kind of the same thing where Kane said to Akira, like, I'll be expecting you to like get revenge for this. So I'll be looking for you coming after me. So I didn't see the need to show the post-credit scene, because they established it in the film. You know, it was basically a confirmation of a new film with those two. So I thought the post-credit scene was redundant and not necessary.
Universe, man.
Yes.
So clearly this movie is a bouncing board to create the John Wick universe, but at the same time, it worked so well as just its own movie at the same time.
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy it, but at the same... But you have to... I'm like... It's clear that was like a map for this movie, was to obviously end John Wick's story, which I'm so glad they did,
yeah,
but also set up at least three more characters in their future projects.
Do you think that it seems like Mr. Nobody will get his own spinoff as
well? Yeah, so Tracker Nobody, basically the same character. I guarantee he'll probably get his own show. Akira is rumored to get her own show or movie. I mean, I think Tracker will get a movie
as
well.
And we already have Ballerina is in post-production.
It's coming out in 2024, so starring Ana de Armas, which will have a guest starring role of John Wick by Keanu Reeves. That's probably the
last. And Winston will be in it as well.
And that takes place between the events of John Wick 3 and John Wick Chapter 4.
Yes, Stahelski said it himself. He said it will take place sometime between then.
So I bet you he's just in like an action sequence. Probably the same thing like Ana de Armas did in No Time to Die.
Yes, I think the audience will fucking freak out once Keanu shows up. I agree. I mean, we've said it before in a bunch of our reviews of modern comic book movies. We prefer standalone films where you don't like team-up movies. They're getting ill. We don't need them every time. It doesn't always need to be setting up another character. So,
but there are team-ups in other genre movies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I would say...
But they didn't set up like a story for Halle Berry's character going forward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. So Halle Berry didn't feel like, oh, we're setting her up for her own thing.
Because she's like, I'm done. Like, we're even, motherfucker.
Even Steven. So yeah, I agree. It was different the way they approached it with Halle Berry. I think they did a better job with that. But not to say, I mean, it's going to be an expanded universe that I think... has a lot of potential. I'm really curious to see Ana de Armas' film Ballerina, which is actually being made by Len Wiseman, who's he did the Underworld films. So if you're a fan of those films.
Some of the Resident Evils as well.
Yeah. Paul W.S. Anderson.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad.
It's okay, man. You only have a movie
podcast. I got
them
mixed up.
And he also did Total Recall remake with Colin Farrell, which was no point in even doing the remake. But they had to. He's a very capable director, so I think that... it's in good hands, and I believe Stahelski is probably exec producing it, staying involved in what's going on with it. So I think that Ballerina has a lot of potential, and I'm curious to see where exactly all the spinoffs are going to be playing, because I believe the first spinoff, The Continental, will be playing on Starz. So it seems like I think Lionsgate has a deal with Starz to show the TV shows, and then they'll probably theatrically releasing something like Ballerina and maybe another one.
Now, John Wick Chapter 4, basically the plot of this film... is John Wick's trying to uncover the High Table as well as gain his freedom from the High Table because there's still a bounty on his head, and he's, of course, he didn't fulfill his blood oath, which he was supposed to, by killing Winston by cutting off his finger. Remember, that's the point of that in that last film, was to save his life, is he had to do that blood oath. And actually, the Harbinger, the character in this film, also clearly had a blood oath that he probably fulfilled with the High Table because he's missing a finger as well. And he's a character who basically is the voice of the High Table for us in this movie. And John Wick has obviously got this bounty on his head that's going up and up and up. And he's being tracked down by the Marquis, played by Bill Skarsgård, as well as tracked by Tracker. But he's looking for refuge from friends in different parts of the world, obviously going to... Japan in the opening of the film to get refuge from his old friend played by Hiroki Sanada, whose name is Shimatsu, as well as his daughter Kira, who is kind of like
Akira,
who is his concierge in a lot of ways. Obviously, Sharon dies in this film because the Marquis is basically cleaning up shop. He has excommunicated Winston from his hotel, as well as demolished the hotel and killing his concierge Sharon in the opening of the movie. And he's hired Kane, Donnie Yen, a super assassin, an old friend of John's, to take him out as well.
I thought it was so smart to get two Asian martial arts icons in this film, Donnie Yen from China and then Hiroki Sanada from Japan. And Sanada has actually worked with Keanu in the past. They were in 47 Ronin together, so he played one of the Ronin samurai in that film. That was made probably like 6 or 7 years ago. Keanu hadn't worked with Donnie Yen, but Donnie Yen, obviously, Ip Man. He's acted and directed a lot of great Chinese martial arts films. So he's actually a filmmaker as well, which is very cool. And then Sanada, I mean, Last Samurai is one of my favorite martial arts movies, and I just really adore that film. And he's
would you even call that a martial arts movie?
Well, there's martial arts in it. They do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, but I wouldn't really call it a martial arts
movie. All right, so yeah, but it's one of my favorite samurai movies.
It's one of my favorite movies.
It is one of my favorite movies, and it's one of my favorite film scores as well. And Sanada is an absolute highlight of that. But he's been in a ton of Japanese films, and he's doing a really good job breaking into American cinema here and there. He was actually in Avengers Endgame. He's in the opening. Hawkeye fights him in that alley. I think it's in Tokyo. Remember that reigning ally? That's who he fights at the end with in the opening of Endgame, that sword fight. And then Black Widow goes up to Hawkeye. She's like, "Where you been?" He's like, "I got a fade."
So that's Sonata.
So you've seen him in a bunch of things. If you weren't aware of who he was,
he was in Bullet Train too.
Yeah, Bullet Train as well. So terrific actor. So I thought it was so smart for them to get two Asian cinema absolute legends for this film. And that's what really excited me for the trailer. When I saw those two actors in it, I was like, oh shit, they're going all out.
Hiroyuki's in a bunch of more stuff. He's in the Army of the Dead. He was in Mortal Kombat, Westworld. Also,
oh, I gotta see Mortal Kombat.
He was in Minions. He was in, 47. The Wolverine he's in. So he's been in Rush Hour 3, mm-hmm. Speed Racer. He's in a bunch of stuff. Sunshine. He's one of the scientists and astronauts in Sunshine.
That's right. He's in Sunshine. You're right.
He's a very good actor.
Not just martial arts, but he's a very good actor.
He's got that presence, man. He's just like got the look, the cool factor. He's got it. Whatever it is for a movie star, he's got it.
And I guarantee he's going to be playing like a lot of like wise teachers as he gets older. Like, he has that quality to him, you know what I mean?
Great voice.
Yeah, he just seems like he's got so much wisdom.
When he talks, you just listen, man. Yeah, he's got that quality to him.
he almost got like chopped in half in Last Samurai in a sequence when he was riding a horse.
In real life?
Yeah, where a stuntman didn't pull back the sword and he had to like dodge it.
Damn.
Because they were using real swords for a lot of those fights.
And Kira, again, is basically his concierge and also daughter and one of his protectors and also a super assassin as well. We also have Kane, played by Donnie Yen, who is such a badass in this movie. He is beyond cool, the sunglasses and everything. And Kane is a blind man, and we learn throughout the film that he took his own eyes, as you can assume, was the sacrifice to the High Table. And it seems like to work for the High Table or maybe to be hired for a job, you have to undergo extensive pain or some sort of blood sacrifice.
I would say it's maybe same thing as John, where you have to overcome a mistake you made.
Not necessarily a mistake.
That's what I'm getting.
Not a mistake. Just you have to show your devotion.
So you think that's why Kane has blinded himself?
Yeah, he said, "I gave my eyes. No one took my eyes. I gave them up." Just like when Tracker gets hired,
he
has to give up the hand sacrifice.
But what I'm saying is he gave up his eyes as a way of paying a debt to the High Table is what I think it is. That's what I'm guessing. That's how I interpret that.
Well, but Tracker didn't have a debt to pay.
Yeah,
he was just showing his devotion. Yeah. I think that's what it is, just to show a devotion.
Yeah, but I mean, damn. Blinding yourself. That's
but
crazy.
There is something in Kane's past where his daughter is technically not free, and he's trying to free his daughter at the same time. That's why the ending of John Wick dying is so incredible, because not only does he accomplish his goal of killing the Marquis as well as gaining his freedom, but he also gains the freedom for his friend who he's just been almost trying to kill at the same time for the whole film.
Because Kane does fulfill his duty.
So it's a very worthy and incredible death for John Wick to go through.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's some sort of blood sacrifice you have to give as a form of devotion.
For sure, yeah.
Physical pain somehow, because maybe Kane did have a failure in the past, and that's why he's blind now.
That's what I'm guessing, because I'm sure there's an oath like cutting off your finger or whatever. And also the Marquis, I think, newly in power, so like that hand thing he did with Mr. Nobody, I'm guessing that's not something that's always happens. But the way I interpreted Kane is that something happened in his past and he owed a great debt to the High Table, so to pay that, he had to willingly take his own eyes.
Okay, yeah, so that's my guess. He and his daughter were not free until John Wick spared them.
Exactly.
But they didn't spare them, and then the duel at the end.
But they did a good job. You don't have to explain it. It's not important. It's interesting. They didn't have to do a flashback, you know what I mean? I think that they're wise enough. Stahelski's like, "I don't need to do a flashback. We don't need to have like a monologue of what happened to Kane and why he's blind." I think they did a great job of just giving us hints.
The Marquis was a really interesting character. I love the suits. Stylish as hell.
Great suits.
I just wish we would have seen him fight. I want to see him fight John Wick.
Because he's a big guy.
I think that would have been really cool.
I was hoping for a showdown, a physical showdown. Because, no, I agree. But although I will say I love the duel and I love the ending.
Oh, the duel is sick.
I think the last 30 minutes of this movie is perfect. But I do agree. I was hoping that they were setting up a showdown between John and the Marquis, because John kills so many people And he fights so many people kind of effortlessly in some way. I was hoping, like, maybe the Marquis an absolute fucking beast, and it could have been a great, like, one-on-one showdown, like an epic boss battle. That's what I was hoping that they were building towards. But the duel, I think, ended up really working really well.
Yeah, I think it just plays to the character. He's brutal, but he's a coward mm-hmm. at the same time. That's why he has Kane fight for him. He's he's going into the duel supremely confident, and then he nominates someone else to fight for him. And even mm-hmm. Kane's like, fight your own fights. I'm not fighting for you.
Yeah.
He's like, don't you want your daughter to be free? You're going to fight for me. Then obviously he's outsmarted in the duel. And I thought the duel was sensational because recently I watched Barry Lyndon for the first time in the last month, and there's a couple duels in that movie that are awesome, incredible scenes. And as soon as the duel is going down, I'm like, oh, yeah, perfect Barry timing. Lyndon.
Perfect timing. But Skarsgård did a great job. His French accent sounded legit. I was like, oh, man, he's really pulling off the French really well. Like, I feel like he's a French actor right now.
Yeah, he's awesome. Great actor.
Yeah, I mean, all the Skarsgårds are great with accents because they actually all have Swedish accents, but they've eliminated their accents as actors, so it takes a lot of work to be able to do that. I mean, you're not going from like getting rid of your Boston accent to be a straight American accent. You're like you're getting rid of a foreign language accent speaking English, so they're very talented guys when it comes to that.
I really enjoyed being in Osaka at the Osaka Continental, and as soon as, you know, the high tables guards showed up and Hiroyuki goes to his men, he's like, we have guests, show them hospitality. I'm like, oh, they're going to pull some swords on us. And then they start getting the bows and arrows, the stars, the swords. I was ready for like a great battle, but I was a little disappointed that it ended up just being kind of shooting arrows from like the second story and then kind of being taken out by all these guys in the suits. I was expecting more of like a samurai showdown between a bunch of people with swords.
Uh-huh. I see. So
that's what I was expecting.
Arrows versus guns.
Because I love sword fights. And there are so many good ones in this movie. Kane has some great ones in this film as well. And he's just magnificent with the swords, just like going all over the goddamn place. And when we were listening to the Q&A with Chad and Keanu, there was someone asked about Donnie Yen and what it's like working with him in a scene in fight choreography. And Keanu's like, yeah, so this is what happened. Me and him had this fight and we planned it out and we were supposed to do this and that. And then Donnie just starts doing this crazy shit everywhere and I'm John just standing like, all right, this isn't going to work. We're going to have to change it up.
He's basically too slow to block any of his hits.
Because Donnie Yen's so fast and so skilled. Not that Keanu's not, but Keanu's like, all right, we're going to have to change it up because this isn't going to work. And then they had John Wick basically just like runs away in one of the scenes because it's like, yeah, I'm not fucking with this guy right now. That's how great Donnie Yen is because they had an idea going into the shooting of how they're going to fight choreograph the scene. But then he's just like, they're like, all right, not only is he too fast, we have to take advantage of it and use it. Mm-hmm. So let's change this up and just do it on the spot.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how much of the choreography is done day of is quite a bit. They planned out, obviously, a lot of the main moves for the fight sequences in terms of like guns and swords and
major
combat.
Blocking.
But
they
said you'd be surprised how much it is day of or the day before, just before filming, just kind of figuring it out in person what's going to work and what's not going to work, especially a lot of the judo moves and a lot of the jiu-jitsu for sure.
And also, I mean, they obviously train in open warehouses with big matted floors. And sometimes they can like build like rudimentary sets out of like maybe cardboard or whatever so they know kind of like what an environment would look like that they're working in. But I think with John Wick, from everything I've seen, they just are on open floor plans when they're training. And so they'll choreograph ideas for fights, but they won't really know until they get onto set what that environment is, what the space is like, where walls are. Are there any physical impediments? Like, for example, the art gallery room. Like, there's a lot of just pieces of art and blocks and structures throughout the entire floor plan. And that's not something that they can really plan ahead of time. They can plan out ideas for the fight, but like it's not until the production team the morning of or the night before builds that set and puts in those final pieces, and then the team shows up in the morning to start shooting. Then they're like, okay, this is what we're working with. So they can only – it's actually better, I think, that way. That's probably why they've moved into that in terms of how they shoot. You can plan ahead, but also you can plan an intricate fight and choreograph it to the T, but then you get to a location, it could be like, this won't work at all. So it's smart of them. I'm sure they've learned from experience that it's best to have a general idea of what we're going to do, but then wait till we're actually standing on the set and see how it can work with our fight.
And what I love about John Wick movies is the unique kills. And every movie has given us so many new kills, brutal kills we've never seen before. Obviously, we got the pencil reference in this movie for sure with Kane. But I'm always like, all right, where's the really cool kill going to be, or where are they going to be? And they managed to pull it off with some new things that we've never seen before with this one as well. I think maybe of all the fight sequences and all the weapons used, my favorite was probably when John found the nunchucks. And
yeah,
it was like the John Wick style of nunchucks. Clearly, he's used them before, but you can tell like it's been a while since he's picked up a pair of nunchucks because it took him a minute before he got used to like doing the cool swings and like putting it under his armpit and everything like that. But the way he was using it was just like, fuck it, I'm just going to use this to bash people in the face with two hands on the nunchucks.
It wasn't pretty.
It was not beautiful. Yeah, it was not graceful like Bruce Lee or anything like that. But I thought that was one of my favorite parts of the movie, just John with the nunchucks. He's using it kind of like a fucking baseball bat, just like swinging it into people's faces.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of that fight, definitely the nunchucks. And I think the best death was Killa's death when he just fucking falls like four stories on his head. And the whole audience gasped. But then in Osaka, when they're leaving the rooftop, and one of the soldiers got shot like in the kneecap and it got stuck to a wall, and then he like tipped upside down and got headshot, and he was just like dangling from his knee. The entire audience reacted really well from that one. There are definitely some good kills. This episode, of course, is sponsored by our great friends at MoviePosters.com. Be sure to use our promo code Raiders10 to get 10% off your order today. They have a huge selection of pretty much every movie and TV show imaginable in their poster library. If you want some John Wick posters, the place to do it is at MoviePosters.com. They are also doing the movie poster giveaway contest in this episode. So if you have not yet entered, head on over to our John Wick Chapter 4 review on YouTube. Make a comment in that comment thread that enters you into the contest drawing. We'll pick a winner in 1 week. Thanks to MoviePosters.com for running this contest for us. And if you want to get some posters, be sure to go there and use our promo code Raiders10 to get 10% off your order today. I would say one of the more impressive stunts that I saw, it probably was the most dangerous, was one stunt guy just fucking jumped down an escalator and fucking just landed. Like, down the entire escalator, just planted right onto the metal platform on the bottom. And you could feel it. And they really shot that. I saw behind the scenes of it. And they really filmed it. Like, the stunt actor really did that. And that was insane. But then also, the stairwell, there was a certain stunt actor...
The stairs.
Okay. The exterior stairs in Paris. They said one stunt actor did it. I can't remember the actor's name, but he was the Paris stunt actor for John Wick, and he did that all of those sequences of falling down the steps. No wire work. He obviously was padded up, but he really did that over and over and over again. And it was really stairs. Those are concrete and stone. It's like that's not padded. It wasn't like they built a set that was safe for him. Like, he really did that. And I'm sure I don't even want to know how many takes he did of that, because there's quite a lot of footage of it that we saw in the movie.
He's got great form.
Yeah. But, man, he was rolling down those steps. Like,
cruising.
But that was a great great stunt. Obviously, extremely dangerous. Like, extremely dangerous, especially with an exposed head falling down like that. But that guy really sold that scene, really made it work, because that scene was one of my favorite scenes because of the comedy. It was like silent film era comedy, like something Buster Keaton would do. And so I thought it was so much fun to throw that in, because John got all the way up to the tippy top, and then he falls all the way down. And to actually see it, him really hitting every step on the way down, was really funny. It was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, it's hilarious. The crowd reacted so well to it, because he just keeps going and going and going and going after everything he went to just to get to the top of the stairs. And now he's falling all the way back down. And it was a great reference to Buster Keaton, because there's at least two or maybe three movies that Buster Keaton did where he goes upstairs and then falls down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just the stairs become like a ramp
flat,
down.
Yeah.
And flat. But that was a great ode to the great physical comedy of the past, which they definitely incorporated in this film. I would say that this might have the most physical humor of the entire franchise, which I think the crowd really responded to so well.
Yeah, because, I mean, stunt actors, I mean, it comes from comedy, from silent film era. That's like the birth of stunts. So I think it's a great thing to be able to throw in that physical comedy into a film like this, because obviously the films are mostly pretty serious. You get the most fun out of the deaths, So I like the change of pace of getting fun with just comedy. And that's something I don't think I saw in any of the John Wick films where, like, you'll get people will go crazy from, like, an awesome death or some crazy kill. But to actually get them react that way with comedy, I think was great. And also, I elbowed you, like, halfway through this film, and I was like, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah, yeah, you can see the influence.
Yeah, they used a lot of scenes from Mission Impossible Fallout, a lot of the sequences and environments that they used in Paris when they filmed that there. Also, Fast X, I don't know if you've seen that trailer, same thing, they used a lot of the Mission Impossible Fallout locations in Europe for that film, for sure. And obviously, I mean, these are obviously very famous landmarks in the city. But I think there was maybe three. So it was the big roundabout and then the underground canal. And you can tell it's like a specific canal in France where there are like holes in the roof of the canal, which are like gated underground holes like in like that park. You know, I don't know how to describe it. It's hard to describe, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah. We're there with you, man. There are holes in the ground.
Yeah, but they did...
like a drain.
But they were smart about how they filmed the same locations because they filmed them at night, so you have a different look. That way it's not like too easy to notice. But I think that we're starting to see how influential that film, especially Mr. Christopher McQuarrie being such a great action director and his influence on action cinema.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also I think that John Wick influenced Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, for sure.
I think specifically that bathroom fight in Mission Impossible Fallout, I think they took a lot of inspiration from John Wick because we weren't really getting those great fight sequences in every Mission Impossible. We were getting fight scenes, but like not to the level that
I'm trying to think.
In Mission Impossible Fallout, that bathroom scene was fucking awesome. And I'm like, this feels like a John Wick fight. It's so cool.
I can't think of a Mission Impossible fight like that before that scene.
But I love when you see huge action franchises or just movies in general just paying respect to each other and taking influence from each other because it just steps the other's game up. And like, oh, they did that. We have to do this. They did this. Yeah. We have to do that.
And then also, Keanu and Tom are two of the best, I mean, stunt actors and drivers of motorcycles and vehicles. I mean, Keanu and Tom are so good at what they do. It makes, like, Stahelski, he spoke about it in terms of how easy it makes shooting something like this, because with every major stunt sequence, whether it be a fight, whether it be some stunts, whether it be driving a car or driving the motorcycle, they don't have to train someone to do it. They don't have to find people to do all these certain things. They just say, Keanu, this is the move. All right, do that. Because he's so good at driving that they don't need to waste time prepping because they already have an actor who can do basically all of it. And so Tom and Keanu are so similar in that way where they really benefit the production. And Stahelski, because the interviewer asked him, like, how do you do this in time? How do you this much take forever to shoot? And he's like, honestly, we can only do it because Keanu's so skilled at all of these aspects of stunt work and driving. And this film has a couple of my favorite vehicle sequences so far in the franchise. I think that knocking the doors off that muscle car, and then when he starts spinning around that group of criminals, shooting them through the door,
so
the open
awesome.
Door, that was one of my favorite parts of all the entire franchise. That was fantastic. And it was like, he's just like spinning the car up for literally 30 seconds
it was
straight.
Awesome,
it was
dude.
Great.
I could have watched that for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And he's really doing that. He's a stunt driver. There's no CGI. Like,
well, that's the thing. It's not that it's like making the production easier. It's that you can get actual real footage of the character. You can see his face while he's doing the stunt.
For sure. For sure.
Rather than having to do different shots or pick up shots or try to hide a stuntman's face.
Absolutely. And also they talked about how they blocked the big sequences. Like the club fight was definitely a highlight of this film because there's so many bodies there. And it was interesting. Stahelski was basically saying, we block it with the main actors and then we start building out groups of extras. So we have the blocking for the fight, for the sequence for that day. And then once the actors have it, then we bring in like a group of 20 extras and tell them the choreography and then they block them out. Then we bring like another 20 extras and they work on their blocking. And then they keep building on that until they have like 200 extras. And everybody at that point when they're ready to film knows exactly where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. And it's basically like a big, huge choreographed dance in a way. And I thought it was a really fascinating insight into how they, because that club sequence in particular, there were so many bodies on the floor. There's so many people. So it was a really impressive sequence blocking that and filming that and making it make sense while also being an entertaining fight sequence.
And he said that he wanted the waterfalls in the walls because he said his father did that in their home or something like that.
His father was a plumber.
Yeah, and he built a waterfall wall in their house. And he's like, I want to make a club and I want all the walls to have waterfalls.
That was funny. And they fucking did it. That was funny.
And he also kept talking about how, like, he's like, there's so much extra footage not used in this movie. This is a 3-hour movie almost. And he's talking about there's so many extra minutes of fight scenes, whether it's in the club. He said there's a lot left out of the club, a lot of great deaths, yeah, he said, that they had to cut, as well as a ton of fight sequences and action sequences in France at the roundabout, at the arcs. He said there's so much stuff that didn't make the film, and it's still 2 hours and almost 50 minutes.
They also cut out an entire thread where John gets the three pistols.
Yeah.
Because they do an insert shot of when John shows up at that place, and he takes out three pistols, and they film, like, close-ups of the pistols. It's because Tucholsky and the crew, they filmed an entire sequence of him getting those pistols at different areas, but they just cut it all out of the film. So those pistols were actually had a lot more backstory where he got those in the film originally.
There's a lot more story in when he's in Berlin as well, in mm-hmm. Germany. So he yeah. said they cut a ton of stuff from Germany. I bet you there's a lot of dialogue that John Wick had that they cut from this movie as well.
I'm sure. I do think that the film ran a little too long. What do you think?
I think it ran, for me, I loved it. I'll watch it all yeah. day, but still, from a story-wise, it felt like it ran a little bit much.
I feel like they could have shaved 10 minutes off, and I do think, as much as I love the action sequences, and as impressive as they are, and I have nothing but respect for the stunt teams and the coordinators and all the people that are performing, I do think that some of the sequences, they went a little too long, and they kind of lost their impact a little bit, where it was just like, here's another guy for him to judo, here's another guy for him to grapple, here's another person for him to grapple and then shoot. So I think that it might have been too many bodies. The body count was too high, I think. And I think if they trimmed down the fights a little bit and made them a little shorter, I think it overall would have helped the pacing of the film. Because I feel like, as cool as the fights were, sometimes they did drag a little bit, where it was just like, are they ever going to stop fighting? I would say maybe it was a little too much of a good thing in some regards.
But I think Chad Stahelski's also like, fuck it.
This is the style.
I got the money.
This is the style of the movie.
Oh, he's loving it.
People are going to love
it. He's loving it.
No, I mean, I love it, but I just felt like maybe it kind of, some of the sequences lost a little impact by extending them for so long. You know
I think
what I mean?
So. Sometimes when it's like the seventh random guy with a gun that John is yeah. grappling and jujitsuing for yeah. a little bit, it's like, speed up a little bit. speed up a little bit.
They could have cut a couple of them out. That's all I'm saying.
Did you know that, so the guy who plays Killa, Scott Adkins, mm-hmm. this is the guy with the fake teeth, the metal teeth in the front, and the gold
They're
teeth.
Gold, yeah.
The gold teeth. And
I knew he was going to pull one of those teeth out because yeah. they kept showing those teeth.
The gambling scene. So that's Killa. He's actually in a fat suit, but because that guy's in like yeah. crazy good shape.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect him to start like doing those like roundhouse kicks. Like, oh shit.
That was funny. It was a lot of fun. Cause I was wondering, I was like, why did they have a guy in a suit doing this performance? And then they started fighting and I was like, oh, okay, this is fun.
Really good prosthetics though. Solid.
Yeah. And that actor did a great job, but it was really funny. It was fun to see a person of that size moving like that. It kind of felt like an anime or something that was like kind of impossible for them to move that fast and that have that kind of agility,
yeah.
but like in real life. But John Wick is a heightened reality in a way. Definitely.
Oh, I mean, it's suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. I mean, absolute heightened reality.
What's his kill count in the franchise? Like 1,000 people.
Yeah. How many? Like, because like the thing is, you accept it, but one of the biggest things for the heightened reality is the bulletproof suits, the ballistics.
Oh, the Kevlar suits. Yeah.
Kevlar suits. And just like running into bullet fire, because like even if the Kevlar suit was a real thing, if you got shot in the shoulder, it would like jump your shoulder back, and like if you got like a shotgun into the chest, you'd be thrown to the ground. And so obviously no one's really reacting like that. They're just like kind of running into gunfire, like point blank range. You accept it because it's John Wick. It's heightened reality.
It's a cheat
code. It's like fuck it. It's like whatever. It's not. This isn't like Saving Private Ryan. It's okay. So you accept the Kevlar suits, and then once you accept that, you have more fun with it.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like watching. I'm like, are these getting out of hand? But at the same time, it's like it's just fun.
It's just John
it's
Wick.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it's just John Wick.
Like, I mean, yeah, he's holding up his suit jacket from
yeah. Because I mean, if you had the blazer jacket obviously it's Kevlar, but like a bullet would still like hit you.
Yeah,
like it would hurt.
It would cut. It would like bash your cheek open.
Yeah, it would go through the jacket and like, just smash you and like punch you in the face.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm also like, it's so cool. Who cares? Yeah, Whatever. Fuck it. It's John Wick.
Whatever.
Whatever. Bulletproof suits.
I loved some of my favorite kills were when he was killing guys with the car, just like ramming into them.
Yeah.
Those were great kills right there. I love them.
The driving sequences were awesome. And I think that just the fights in this movie were excellent. And man, they just went to town. I bet you, watching this movie, it seems like it was such an exhausting film to make.
Yeah.
Like how much work went into it every day, just the stunt fighting and just day to day. Just these guys are in such good shape and the endurance that they, even just Keanu has to have, like constantly moving. Every scene, the guy is fighting for his life.
He looks like the best shape he's been in since in any of them, honestly. Like in terms of like how he looks, he's obviously not as fast as he used to be.
Yeah, it's noticeable, yeah.
But he looks like he's in, for being 58 years old, in ridiculous shape. It's absurd.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree.
But the stunt team, so a film like this, they have a stunt team of 30 people, Stahelski said, and these 30 stunt guys and women, like, they're just playing, like, multiple henchmen.
And he was talking about how the first film is really just judo and handguns, pistol fighting, and how they've just slowly incorporated more and more martial arts, and basically what they do is obviously they have an idea in locations. Obviously, they're in Osaka, Japan, so you're going to take martial arts that are based from there as well as some other countries depending on where they are. But also, he says, we have our crew of stunt people, and basically, we work with what people's strengths are. If someone's good at this, we incorporate that into a fight. If someone's better at that, we use that for a fight. I think that's a really great way to just kind of have like a Swiss Army production of just like whatever, Swiss Army knife, whatever you need, you can use and just do it into the scenes for at the moment.
It's a great point. I like that.
It was really cool to just hear him talk about stuff like that.
And I like the Osaka armor, how it harkened back to the ancient samurai armor, but like with like combined with like modern SWAT gear.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty badass. I loved it.
This movie is excellent. There are some still big questions about this movie, I think. I think some people might wonder, is John Wick actually dead by the end of this film after the duel?
Ah, come on. He's dead.
He's definitely dead. Yeah, I think Keanu's done. I think you could tell, like, this is probably a really exhausting movie to make, as much fun as it probably was. I think he's done with John Wick. But I think that the duel and the ending was so satisfying for fans, the way that Kane and John go out together, basically, and basically, it's a shootout.
I love when they join forces.
Yeah.
I loved it.
But then just outsmarting the Marquis and taking the Marquis out basically together. They both get freedom and they both take out the Marquis and they don't have any more obligations to the High Table, which I thought was such a great ending.
I knew John was going to die, but I was really pleasantly surprised with how it happened, with him killing the Marquis, tricking him. I thought that was great, but I knew he was going to die once they started talking about tombstones.
But the third fire,
like, he's dead.
When Kane shot John, I'm like, did John fire his pistol? I was like, did he shoot? Yeah. I don't think he shot his gun. Mm-hmm.
Good eye.
I was like, is it because he got shot first? But I'm like,
Heard one gunshot.
Yeah, I noticed that when we were
nice eye. Yeah, but once they started talking, once John said "loving husband" on my tombstone, I was like, oh, he's dead. He's definitely so dying.
Another question I think people might have is, was Winston John's father, because he says that goodbye, my son, to his grave, right? I think that he's just a father figure to John. He's not actually his father. John's an orphan, and I don't think Winston is his father. Obviously, it could be possible, but I think that in terms of a blood relation, I don't think Winston is his father. I think it's just like more of a, I've been a father to you for many years.
Yeah, I'd say absolutely not. Isn't he Russian?
John? Well, he's an orphan.
Yeah, but wasn't he from Russia, though?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't make sense for Winston to be his father.
No, I'm getting questions.
Oh, No. I'm just thinking it out. I'm not saying.
I thought you were coming at me, bro.
No, I'm just thinking out loud. Don't worry, man. Don't get insecure. It's okay. I got this. I'm saying it wouldn't make sense to even question that because John's an orphan from Russia.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm just saying these are questions people
Why
have.
Would you ask that, Jim? Why would you? Don't you understand what I'm saying, Jim?
Next question that people may be taking away from this film. Does Akira kill Kane in that post-credit scene?
I wish she did.
We'll find out. I bet you they have a crazy fight in the public right there.
My thing is, so her project, is it going to open then? Is it going to, like, is that film or that TV series going to open with her, like, attacking him in the public square? So that's why I'm not a fan of, like, a post-credit scene like that. I mean, if you're going to show a new character or reveal something, yeah, that's fun. But, like, in the middle of an action moment, like, I thought it was. I did. I'm just saying. I did not like that post credit scene.
Yeah, it just takes away from the movie that we just watched.
Yeah.
And we just experienced in like promoting John Wick 4 and experiencing that, because now all people can talk about is like, oh, what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Rather than just enjoying the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes away from the film.
Just live in the now, man.
Live in the now. Like, we just watched a 3-hour epic action movie, and it's like, now you want us to just only care about what's coming later? If you're going to do it, just like Keanu said, just shove that razor in his throat and just stab him to death. Like, they should have just done it.
If they're going to do a post-credit scene, I think it would have been better to reveal a new character instead. Because I'm saying, like, you know what? It would have been cool if she, if the post-credit scene was her attacking Kane and killing him.
That would have been sick.
That would have been cool. But to cut it right as she's approaching him with the razor in her hand, I was like,
it's petty.
I was like, you guys really cut on that?
I mean, we love you, Lionsgate, but it's petty.
I was like, did you cut on that? Come on. But if she like went to like a different continental and they revealed like a really cool character. I thought, so I said before the film started, I was like, I bet it's a post-credit scene and I bet it's Ana de Armas. So I was wrong, but I was right. There would be a post-credit scene. It would have been like, imagine the uproar.
If it was Ana de Armas,
the crowd would have fucking exploded. People would have lost their minds.
That's what I was expecting.
Someone would have had a baby. So like, imagine if Akira went to like wherever Ana de Armas' ballerina character is and went to like her to see her, and then it's just like Ana de Armas. Cut to black. That's a better post-credit scene, I think.
I agree, man. I absolutely agree.
Thank you for agreeing with me.
I think just post-credit scenes are just so gimmicky these days.
It's just become
a thing. It's like, do we really need it?
Mm-hmm.
Do we really, really need that?
I mean, do we?
The studios want them.
Lionsgate is building a Wickverse, and you can't blame them for that. It's guaranteed money, and it's something people want. So you can't knock them for like just following the crowd. You know what I mean? They're just doing what they do.
I really liked Kane, though, is the blind assassin. I thought it was really interesting. And the different techniques he uses to fight, whether it's sort of like, kind of like what you can assume is maybe some sort of sonar, where he's just kind of making noise with the sword, like rubbing against things, as well as when he was in that kitchen scene with the sound.
The doorbells.
The monitors. I thought it was really interesting because he's clearly he's such a skilled assassin, martial artist, the character Kane, that even as a blind man, he's still just as good. But he's done it. He's adapted into what his handicap is now in terms of having cut his own eyes to lose his sight.
And he's clearly much better with hand-to-hand combat, because I like how in the kitchen scene that you just brought up, he set the alarms up, the motion sensor alarms for whenever the guys walk past. And then so like, say example, like a guy passed by one of them and the doorbell went off. He would just fire at them, but he often missed them. You know what I mean? He missed them a bunch because he can't see them. He knows like the general direction, but it's not like I think I would not have liked it if he just kept like headshotting people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then it would have been like, that's unbelievable.
It's too like mystical.
Yeah, but
because it works, because he also plays a blind fighter in Rogue One.
Yeah,
and it works really well in that movie because he has the Force.
I am one with the Force.
So he has the Force with him, and so you accept that.
Yeah,
but this one, they made it work in a different way.
Yeah, because if he was shooting people, no problem. I would have been like, come on. But he was like shooting in their general direction and oftentimes missing.
And just more using it as a way to break people up and just get them
panic
closer to
them.
Him. Yeah.
Make them panic. Yeah.
So, but I mean, will he be is there going to be a third movie where Donnie Yen plays a blind assassin?
He said he wants a spinoff.
Yeah, he wants his own spinoff?
Yeah.
I would watch a Kane spinoff for sure.
I'd watch a Kane spinoff.
I think that would be really cool.
He's a great character.
He's the coolest person in the movie, I think.
He's one of the best characters he could be the best character outside of John in the franchise.
He just oozes cool.
He's so cool.
Donnie Yen is just like such a badass.
Mm-hmm.
It just works.
So yeah, I'm guessing. So my guess for spinoffs, it seems like Mr. Nobody will have a spinoff too, because he obviously wanted the bounty, but since John saved his dog and you saw how much the dog meant to him, then he saved John.
I really like the dog and how he's like, what does he say, nuts?
Yeah,
he says, nuts.
Yeah, nuts. Nuts. We needed a dog. Yeah, you got to get the dog in there. It's part of the John Wick lore. You got to have a dog somewhere. Mm-hmm. And there was a great dog reveal of one of the henchmen when the dog comes out of the darkness. That was a great reveal. That was great. That was awesome.
Shit. Nuts.
So I suppose he'll get, he's, they seem to be setting him up for a spinoff as well.
Seems like it.
Yeah, so
seems
we're going like to get, sure. So Tracker, Winston, Ballerina, Akira,
Kane.
And Kane. So that's five
the,
spinoffs
that's
right
John
there.
Wick verse, the
Damn,
Wick verse.
That's a lot of spinoffs.
My God.
It's a lot.
Whew. Well, I think they're probably going to wait and see how Ballerina does. Well, they'll maybe like start developing these other ones.
Well, I mean, the Continental is coming out soon on
Stars.
So
Continental is TV series on Stars. Ballerina is going to be a theatrical release
yep.
mm-hmm. for Lionsgate.
That comes out next year.
If they pull that off, man, this will pop.
So I will say there was something missing in this film. We got a little bit here and there. Gore. The first couple especially did a fantastic job with gore. And even the third one as well, especially with like the knife fighting. Remember he just stabs the guy in the fucking skull. There were a couple instances like kill his death. There were a couple of nice kills, but I felt like I was hoping for more gore and more like crazy gore to see in this film. So I think that especially the first few films did a better job of depicting gore.
Yeah, I guess the blood was minimal.
Yeah, it was pretty minimal, I would say.
Maybe they didn't have enough money in the visual effects budget to...
Yeah, maybe they just had to work fast.
Yeah.
But I would say that something like halfway through the film, I'm like, I haven't seen much gore. There's been a couple of things, but like not really too gory of a John Wick movie.
You know, it's probably a continuity thing, especially when you're filming in all these fight scenes
yeah.
over and over again
for
on
sure,
set
yeah.
the day. I bet you there's a continuity issue if you're using practical blood.
Yeah.
And visual effects blood they probably just spent on the action sequences, whatever yeah. they needed.
But that's why I think that the knife fight's my favorite fight in the franchise. That one gets pretty bloody.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, more blood would have been cool. Mm-hmm. I love blood in movies.
It's great. Ugh. Makes it come alive, man.
Ooh, it's coming alive.
But yeah, there were a couple instances, and you could see the audience, because it makes a difference. Like, when the audience really reacts when they see, like, blood or splatter or, like, crazy gore, then everyone comes alive.
Yeah.
And it makes a difference from the other kills where they'll just shoot someone in the head or like, get throat, like, underneath a mask or something.
The music was great, too, and when the John Wick theme comes in, it was pretty awesome.
Tyler Bates did a great job
with the music mm-hmm. as well. Cinematography was awesome. You know, this probably won't get any awards recognition, but, you know, it's one of the best shot films of the year so far.
It's the best shot of the franchise. It's visually one of the best films of the year, I agree. Especially
great colors.
Yeah, so they do a great job with it. It's not just neon. Like, I think it kind of gets that, like, that term slapped on it. It's neon. What the cinematographer and Stahelski do is they obviously it's colorful lighting, but they wisely use opposites on the color wheel. So they'll do red and green contrasting, and then they'll do cayenne and yellow contrasting a lot. And it's the most appealing thing to the eye, the human eye, when we see opposite sides of the color wheel contrasting together. Guillermo del Toro does it a lot. That's why most of his films have the cayenne, yellow colors in the same frame contrasting with one another. They utilize that a lot in this film. There's an entire sequence. I think it's the Osaka sequence. It's all green and red. Green and red because they're on opposite sides of the color wheel. They clash so well that our minds love it. Our eyes love it. Same thing with cayenne and yellow.
That's why Christmas is green and red.
That's why.
It sells.
That's why. So they're wisely, they're not just lighting it with like, yeah, just make a bunch of colorful lights. They're doing it on purpose. And from what I could tell, every scene had two main colors and they were opposite ends of the color wheel.
Great point, man.
Thanks, man.
Great point.
Appreciate it.
This movie was loud, bombastic, and epic.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. Even though it ran almost 3 hours, I still had an absolute blast. John Wick Chapter 4 was an awesome ride. What a great conclusion to the character of John Wick.
Yeah.
I think that he's dead for sure. Maybe we'll obviously see him in Ballerina. Hopefully not too, I don't want to see him for too much in that movie. Like, I just want him to come in real quick.
Yeah.
Because I want Ana de Armas to, you know, not be overshadowed in that film.
I'm putting my money on it's going to be like Ana's cameo in
No Time to Die.
No Time to Die. It's going to be an action sequence they do together.
Like a 10-minute sequence.
And then he'll be out.
He's like, all right, I'm out of here.
Hey, we should work together sometime. That's what I'm guessing it's going to be like. And it'll be fun. It'll be great to see.
It will be. Looking forward to that. Again, that's going to be 2024. We'll have the Continental as well. We'll check that out when that's coming out on Stars.
And I know we had a couple of cons for the film, but I still gave this film an 8 out of 10.
I thought
it was
great. I'm giving it a 9.
I thought it was great.
Giving it a 9 out of 10.
I thought it was great.
having a great time.
Yeah.
But I give them all, I have every John Wick movie at a 4.5, except for number two, I have a 4.
Uh-huh.
So every one of these movies I rank at a 9-ish.
Well, that's what I was saying. When you compare it to the Matrix franchise, this is so superior because it's got the consistency of they're all really good.
Well, I mean, the Matrix is the superior of every.
Well, so yeah, the thing is like, if
this
I
just one movie,
if,
that's how great that one movie is.
For me, if I had to choose between watching The Matrix for the rest of my life or watching John Wick's 1-4,
Matrix,
I would choose The Matrix immediately. That's me, and that's how special I think that film is.
I'll just close my eyes during Resurrections.
I wouldn't even watch the others. I would just watch The Matrix.
No, where you had to.
I had to.
An endless loop
of Matrix Resurrections.
Of all four.
Okay, so if I had to do all
four. If you had to do an endless loop of all four Matrix movies or all four John Wick movies, what are you doing?
I mean, The Matrix is that good. I might go Matrix.
The first Matrix.
Because the first Matrix is that good.
I don't hate Reloaded, man.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
I think it's an overhated movie.
Yeah.
It's got a special place in my heart because we loved the hell out of it when we were 10 and it came out.
Yeah, we fucking ate that shit up.
I thought it was the coolest movie ever.
I mean, that freeway chase is sick.
It's fucking awesome.
It's a great
chase.
Awesome. It's a great sequence.
They built that highway.
Yeah, it's
great. Built a whole mile of highway for that.
It's a crazy sequence.
That's insane. And that entire wall. They built that.
Yeah. They built the wall.
That's crazy.
And Carrie Moss did a lot of her own driving on that motorcycle. She did basically all of it.
Yeah. And actually, that reminds me of Chad Stahelski explaining how they'd shot the big roundabout in France, how they're using real cars and they're really running around on the lanes. So he said that each lane was color coordinated with cones. And so whatever sequence they were shooting, like this color is where the cars will be going through. This color is where the humans can safely be in this lane. So basically he's like, it was kind of just like safely, like the best you can, make sure you're right in the right colored lane so you don't get hit by a car. But also the cars at max were going about 10 miles per hour, especially for impacts. But obviously the close-up shots and speeding up a little bit, they look like they're going faster. But safely, especially for the impacts, they're going about 10 miles per hour, max 20 miles per hour if they're driving past people. But they basically, they had color-coordinated lanes so that you could know which lane was going to happen and where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, but they did say, Keanu was like, stay in your lane. If you don't stay in your lane, you're getting hit by a car.
Yeah, just be really careful.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of the cars, if they were getting hit, a person were padded with CGI green screen pads.
So they were hitting them for real, but they were padded.
Yeah, green screen
padding. So you got the impact.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah.
It's very smart. It looks great. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, they're really there filming it. Mm-hmm. It's in the camera. That's why it's awesome. This movie's fucking awesome. It's sick. But I hope you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it.
Got anything else?
I am very happy with how it concluded. I'm glad that we're only getting 4 John Wick movies and not extending it on. Keanu did his part. He is one of the greatest action stars to ever live. Stahelski has proven himself to be one of the best directors of action in the modern era. I can't wait to see his Ghost of Tsushima film.
Man, I hope they fast-track that.
Yeah, I have high hopes for that. And then I'm looking forward to seeing Ana de Armas leading Ballerina next year.
Then we got the Continental. So the John Wick universe is just starting.
Are you Austrian now?
German.
John Wick.
I don't know. The John Wick universe. It's getting going. Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, at least it's not the end of the road begins now.
Thanks so much for tuning in to our review of John Wick Chapter 4. Please become a patron today at patreon.com/RaidersOfTheLostPodcast. At a minimum payment of $2, you get access to our weekly chat, which is now exclusively going to Patreon, and a weekly bonus episode on a movie topic. Minimum of $2. We also have a $5, $10, $25, and $100 tier patronage on patreon.com. Each tier gets you awesome perks. That $10 tier gets you access to our Discord. It's an incredible film community. We also do watch parties on there a couple times a month. We're watching a Dragon Ball Z movie tonight on Discord.
Yeah, anime night.
Should be fun. And then at $25 tier, the Godfather tier, you get your own custom episode. You pick a topic, and we'll do it just for you. And then that $100 tier, it's the Chosen One package, the Neo package. You get everything we've mentioned as well as some other perks, like you get free merchandise as well as a custom watch party. You pick a movie, we'll watch a viewing party with you about that. After 3 months, you get to come on the show for a fun guest segment and an intermission, then going a little further into the topic, as well as you are getting a shout out at the end of every main episode and an executive producer credit.
It's a lot of fun. We're happy to everyone who is a patron, and if you haven't joined, do it today.
Take care, everybody.
See you next time.
This episode was executive produced by our Chosen One patrons, Cody Moen, Andrew Hagen, Becca Keen, Benjamin Cook, Calvin Murphy Griggs, Nicholas Martin, Darian, Tyler McFly, and Sal Kotching. Our Chosen One patrons are our biggest supporters. Thank you so much.
Thank you for watching Raiders of the Lost podcast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit the like button as well, notifications for sure. Listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere you can listen to podcasts. And be sure to check out this other content we have on our YouTube channel.